my man.
Chapter 4. Unexpected Meetings.
This world is gonna find myself swallowed, drowning in your heat. As long as we're going down, baby, you should stick around. Baby, you should stick around.
The indie pilot Rex's new friend had told him about wasn't in the caravanserai at the moment. But the bouncer he'd been talking to had said that he'd be back in a few hours. Rex settled down to eat his pot of sauced meat and flatbread, while Anakin managed a few more bites before falling asleep again. Padme removed herself to the corner of the crib, wrapping herself in a blanket as she curled up with her datapad. She had set up an alert to let her know when Amidala, Naboo, or even Kenobi showed up on the holonet, which had been fairly often since they had arrived, and there were several dozen new reports since the last time she had accessed the holonet. She plugged her earbuds in, wondering if there was a chance that she would start getting the answers she wanted. Mostly, it was nothing new, just rehashing the Senate sessions of the past few days. The declarations of war, the army, the Jedi, sanctions from the Commerce Guilds, neutrality votes from various systems. Padme had heard variations on all of it hundreds of times in the past 3 years. The handful of reports that had come out of Confederate space were all interdicted.
You know, it's easy to see Amidala and Kenobi as sympathetic, even romantic figures.
13 years ago, maybe,
said the talk show's host. Padme recognized him from late nights spent in the office with Bail Organa, Mon Mothma, and the rest of her friends from the Senate. Some of the others liked working with white noise, though Padme preferred silence or music.
But today, I'd say that all went out the window as soon as Kenobi ignited that lightsaber.
The text at the bottom of the screen identified the guest speaker as a professor from the University of Alderaan, a tall Zeltron male with a shock of white hair.
The thing to remember is, and the Senate, the Jedi, and the Supreme Chancellor would all like to forget this, as shown by the number of holonet reports on Kenobi and Amidala they've interdicted, that this didn't start 3 days ago when Kenobi ignited his saber, or 3 years ago when Naboo and 200 of the systems seceded from the Republic and formed the Confederacy, or even 10 years ago when Amidala threw all Republic and Commerce Guild officials off Naboo. It began 13 years ago, when the Trade Federation chose to enforce its political power by first blockading, then invading, a sovereign system. And in response to that, the Galactic Senate sat on its thumbs and did nothing. That seems a little harsh, Dr. Geary.
Padme paused the video by tapping the screen, and took an earbud out to call Obi-Wan over. He put his bowl down, touched a hand briefly to Anakin's shoulder to check on him, then crossed the room to settle down beside her. She pulled the earbuds out of the datapad entirely, turning the sound down low so they wouldn't disturb Anakin and Rex, while she summed up what she had just heard.
No, I don't think it's harsh at all. The Republic was formed to protect individual systems that would otherwise be vulnerable, either to a military attack or to exploitation by monopolies like the Trade Federation or other commerce guilds. The Jedi Order is supposed to be the physical manifestation of that promise. 13 years ago, both those institutions failed Naboo.
Well, that isn't quite true, is it? After all, there were 2 Jedi Knights sent to mediate between the Federation and Naboo. That's 1 Jedi Master and 1 Jedi Apprentice,
Geary corrected.
And that only works if both parties are prepared to negotiate, which the Trade Federation clearly wasn't.
That depends on who you believe. The Federation maintained that the Jedi weren't interested in negotiation during the Senate hearings and the trial,
said the talk show host. Padme thought his name might be Mitt something or other.
Kenobi claimed that they offered him and Jin physical violence when they tried to meet with him. But can we really believe Obi-Wan Kenobi? I mean, he's not exactly reliable. Now that's where you're wrong. Kenobi is very reliable. He left the Jedi,
Mitt pointed out. Padme glanced at Obi-Wan and saw his mouth tighten, but he didn't say anything.
So did our Supreme Chancellor,
Giri said.
Do you want to tell Dooku that he isn't reliable because he used to be a Jedi? Well, that's very different. Both Dooku and Kenobi left the Order at the same time for roughly the same reasons. Kenobi is demonized because he was an apprentice, because he sided with Amidala, and because he wasn't as politically savvy as Dooku, who made his reasons very clear on repeated occasions, and who put himself immediately into the public eye in a way that Kenobi and Amidala avoided for the first 5 years after the occupation ended. But I think we're getting off topic, Mitt.
Right. You were telling me how, in your opinion, the Republic itself failed Naboo when the Trade Federation invaded.
From the skeptical tone in Mitt's voice, he didn't seem terribly convinced on this point. Padme was fairly certain that the Republic had failed Naboo in her own timeline, but it all had been over so quickly that Palpatine had convinced her that attempting to make a point out of it was comparable to building a mountain out of a molehill. She certainly hadn't considered seceding from the Republic over it, even in her most furious moments.
That's right, Mitt. The Republic and the Senate are supposed to protect the systems they represent. But even after Palpatine, the former senator from Naboo, was elected Supreme Chancellor, the Senate refused to act on behalf of the Naboo. For 8 months, the entire system just dropped off the holomap and no one even noticed. Even the Jedi didn't seem to notice that they'd misplaced a knight and his apprentice. Now, you tell me that there isn't something wrong with that.
There are thousands of systems in the Republic, Doctor. Naboo is, or was, small and politically and economically unimportant. The Senate had more important things to deal with. The Trade Federation has a lot of pull.
Padme wondered if he actually believed what he was saying, or if he just liked playing devil's advocate. Obi-Wan must have agreed with her, because she heard him mutter, "Git," under his breath.
That's exactly it, though. The Federation, the rest of the Commerce Guilds, and all the systems they have in their pockets were able to tie up the Senate for months until the matter of Naboo was simply forgotten. And yes, Naboo is just one system out of thousands, but there are millions of beings living there. Hundreds of thousands died during the occupation while the Senate sat and debated issues like the Spaceport Beautification Bill. And to make matters worse...
Padme couldn't possibly imagine what might make matters worse. But she didn't get to find out, because just then there was a light tap on the door. She paused the video while Rex got up to answer the door, his hand on his blaster grip. Anakin was still asleep, but next to her, Obi-Wan had shifted his weight, his hand going to his hidden lightsaber as he prepared to leap to his feet. He relaxed as the door slid open to reveal the Weequay girl in her early teens. "My daddy says that the pilot he told you about is here," she said. "He's in one of the back cribs. I'll take you." She peered curiously around at them as Anakin finally stirred, sitting up and dragging his cloak around himself. Rex glanced over his shoulder at Obi-Wan, who nodded. He stood up, offering Padme a hand. Anakin staggered to his feet on his own, rubbing a hand over his face.
"You can stay here and sleep," Obi-Wan told him quietly.
Anakin shook his head, pulling his cloak up over his face as if the light hurt his eyes.
"I'm fine. I'll come. You think I'm going to trust us to some hotshot pilot who probably crawled out of a junk heap on the Outer Rim?"
"Well, I do it nearly every day," Obi-Wan said dryly.
"Hey!"
The Weequay girl led them through the caravanserai's twisting halls to another crib on the same floor, though on what Padme thought was the opposite side of the building. As they approached, she heard the sound of raised voices through the closed door.
Come on, Deeks. You know I don't run passengers. I'm strictly cargo only.
But you don't have a cargo right now. I know you don't want to linger on a Republic planet if you can avoid it, my old friend. And these people want passage into the Confederacy.
Oh, sure. If I can even get off this rock without being shot down.
It can't be, Padme thought, recognizing the voice. It is impossible.
The Weequay girl darted forward to press the control panel for the door.
I've brought them, Daddy, she said, and the two speakers inside the room swung around to look at them.
One was a Weequay male, obviously the girl's father.
The other was Anakin Skywalker.
Dooku slammed his open palm down on his desk.
I thought you had the Organas under control.
Windu and Yoda, present via hologram since he was still off-world, seemed unaffected by this display of emotion.
To Alderaan, Master Sakura has been sent, said Yoda. No hint had she of this move.
I suspected that Bail Organa might have been working for Amidala, but we had no hint that Queen Brea had any idea about any of this, and we had no warning that the delegation would go over the Confederacy instead of merely prattling peace. 300 members of the delegation are Core Worlds, Master Jedi. Alderaan and Chandrila are founding members of the Republic, for the love of the Force.
Dooku clenched his fist and straightened up, pacing in front of the executive office's massive window.
I spoke to Bail Organa a few hours ago, Windu said, which made Dooku turn back towards him and glare. He told me that he was going back to Alderaan because his wife was ill. That was clearly a lie.
Clearly, Dooku said coldly. If her broadcast was anything to go by, Brea Antilles Organa is in the pink of health. I don't know how she and Amidala are overriding the holonet like this, but it must be stopped. The Force alone knows what Amidala has planned next.
Master Galia is coordinating with the Senate Guard, Windu said. So far, they've searched the offices and embassies of about half the delegation members. They've all been cleaned out. The Organas were planning this for a very long time. Long before the Senate declared the Confederacy's sovereignty.
I was a fool to assume that Bail Organa and Mon Mothma would never be able to bring all the members of the delegation of 2000 to heel, Dooku said bitterly. They've spent the past 3 years fighting amongst themselves as officers in the Senate chamber. Even the Trade Federation thought they were all bark and no bite. I knew Organa and Mothma agreed with Amidala, but I never thought they would convince Alderaan and Chandrila to leave the Republic. The Senate played right into Amidala's hands, the idiots. Bail Organa had them all fooled. Declaration of war, my crippled old dewback.
What of the Special Operations Bureau?
Yoda asked.
Compromised, were they, by Senator Organa's actions?
Dooku barked a short laugh.
Compromise doesn't begin to describe it, my old friend. Bail Organa uploaded a virus into the SOB systems that wiped our entire intelligence database. Our best technicians are trying to restore what they can, but it isn't looking good. We're lucky that he didn't have access to the Jedi archives or the executive office files, and that we never interlinked them with the SOB systems.
How crippled are we?
We don't know yet, Dooku said. There are external backups off-world which aren't linked to the main SOB systems, but unfortunately the hyperlanes to that system are now controlled by the Confederacy, a fact that Bail Organa is undoubtedly aware of. As for the delegation systems, we still have all the Kuat Drive Yards planets, but we've lost Dak, and the loss of the Mon Calamari shipyards will not only cut our warship productions by a third, it gives that advantage to the Confederacy.
He turned away from the two Jedi, locking his hands behind his back. The biggest damage is psychological. By now, most of the galaxy will have seen Queen Brea's broadcast. Alderaan has a great deal of political sway, and seeing them go over to the Confederacy, especially so soon after the declaration of war,
will convince more systems to follow the delegation. I want Bail Organa, Master Jedi. All the other senators and representatives from the delegation have returned to their home planets, but we lost track of Organa after he transmitted the virus and jumped to hyperspace. We know he hasn't arrived in Alderaan. Find Bail Organa for me, Master Jedi. If I have him, I can convince Brea to recant, and if Alderaan returns to the Republic, the others will follow.
I think, Windu said slowly, that we may know where he's going. Our agent Phantom on Naboo told us that Obi-Wan Kenobi will be going off-world shortly to rendezvous with a contact from the Republic on Baz Piddi. I was going to request permission to take a Jedi task force and go after him. This could be our only chance for quite some time.
Do it, said Dooku. But Kenobi and Organa come back to Coruscant alive. I don't want more bodies. I want to get ahead of Amidala for once. Bring me Obi-Wan Kenobi and Bail Organa, Master Jedi. Bring them to me alive.
Yoda and Windu glanced at each other.
I'll go myself, Windu said.
Obi-Wan might have surprised Luminara and Deeth, but even he can't hold off a dozen Jedi.
And
the communications console on Dooku's desk erupted in a frantic flurry of beeping. Dooku flicked his fingers at it, the force humming around him, and snapped.
What?
Supreme Chancellor, this is Naval Fleet Command on Coruscant. We lost track of one of the Trade Federation battle groups.
Dooku shut his eyes.
What battle group was it, and where were they headed?
The Sakak battle group under Admiral Dauphine, Supreme Chancellor. Its last known location was near Kashyyyk in the Mid-Rim, en route to join the siege of Bothwai.
That's not far from Baz Piddi, Windu said.
Dooku stabbed at another comlink control.
Where is Newt Gunray?
He demanded, after the Senate guard's greeting.
The answer came a moment later.
Your Excellency, according to Senator Dodd's aides, Viceroy Gunray left Coruscant a few hours ago to join up with the Sa'ak battle group.
Dooku swung around to face the two Jedi, his expression furious.
Find them, he snapped, before the Trade Federation does. And find out who told him.
Anakin's head hurt so badly that he barely noticed the half-familiar Force signature until he was already inside the room. Even then, he couldn't quite put a finger on whose it was, which meant that it could be any of the hundreds of Jedi he'd met in passing over the past decade. He was attuned enough to Obi-Wan that he had sensed his friend's anxiety spike the instant the door slid open. But Padme and Rex, along with anyone else Force-null, were completely blank to him. It was like being half blind and half deaf, the Force close enough to touch but so painful to use that the idea of actually doing so seemed like the worst kind of madness. And yet, Anakin couldn't help but reach for it, over and over, so used to having the Force at his fingertips that its loss seemed worse to him even than the loss of his right hand.
It'll come back, he told himself. Obi-Wan said it would. He wouldn't lie to you.
Except the other Obi-Wan, the older Obi-Wan from the other timeline, had done so every day for almost 2 months because he hadn't been able to trust Anakin not to turn to the dark side if he knew the truth. His Anakin, the man who would become Darth Vader, had done so, bringing down the Republic and destroying the Jedi Order in the process. Not that I did any better. Only I didn't do it on purpose.
He raised one hand to rub at his aching temples, dislodging the hood of his cloak in the process.
It didn't help. The pain came from inside his head, running along the channels of his mind that usually controlled the Force.
He was vaguely aware of Obi-Wan's familiar rich tones as he introduced them to the pilot Rex's new friend had found, but couldn't quite corral himself to track the actual words.
The Chuda!
Adrenaline and recognition cut cleanly through the pain. Anakin jerked his head up, staring at the being Obi-Wan had been talking to. Human, male, and him. The other Anakin's blank shock only lasted for a moment. He threw a punch at Obi-Wan, who simply leaned out of the way to avoid it, pulling Padme along with him as the other Anakin, Skywalker, let's go with that, threw himself at Anakin. Or at the door, but since Anakin was standing between him and it, the distinction didn't matter. Anakin didn't need the Force to fight. Training took over as he blocked the punch Skywalker threw at him, grabbing his arm and turning to ram him face first into the door behind him. Skywalker shifted at the last moment, pulling Anakin's feet out from beneath him with a fairly neat Force trick. Anakin slammed a kick into the backs of his knees, twisting to his feet before Skywalker caught him with a blow to the kidneys, and Anakin returned the favor with a punch that sent his head snapping to one side.
Anakin, that's our pilot, Obi-Wan said,
sounding long-suffering and not even slightly bothered.
Try not to damage him too much.
I'm your pilot,
Anakin grunted between punches. He slammed a kick up into Skywalker's chest that sent him staggering backwards.
You're not fit to pilot a trash barge at the moment, Obi-Wan said. Or haven't you noticed?
Skywalker wiped blood from his mouth as he straightened up.
Who in blazes are you people?
He snarled. His Tatooinean accent was much stronger than Anakin's. Even through the haze, Anakin felt the Force gather around him. He started to reach for the ragged threads of his own powers, then heard Obi-Wan say, "That's enough of that, I think," and sensed Obi-Wan countering whatever it was Skywalker had been trying to do. Anakin saw Skywalker's face go the dead white of fresh-fallen snow.
"Jedi," he whispered,
and threw himself at Anakin, pulling him back into the wall behind him with a shoulder tucked against his chest.
"Enough of this poodoo,"
Anakin thought to himself, and hit him hard enough that he felt the echoes of it reverberate up his left arm. He grabbed Skywalker's wrist with one hand and tucked one leg around his knee and elbow as he shifted, dropping and pivoting on his free hand until Skywalker was face down on the floor, trapped beneath Anakin with his arm twisted up behind his back. Skywalker twitched once, then froze as he looked up into the barrel of the blaster Padme was holding on him.
"Don't," she said. "Unless you want to get shot in the face," Anakin said.
He could taste blood in his mouth. He must have cut his lip open on a tooth. "I'm pretty sure she's been looking for an excuse to shoot me for a couple of days now. Just between us, I'd rather it was you than me."
"Tsakotsi won't ready not you," Skywalker hissed.
"Nah, I'm going down in flames, brother," Anakin said. He glanced up as Obi-Wan walked over, his thumbs tucked into his belt as though he was amused by the whole affair.
"Appreciate the show?" "Your technique is rather good, considering that you're out of shape," Obi-Wan said kindly. "Let him up." "You sure you don't want to kick him in the head a couple of times while he's down? I'd rather it was him than me."
"Anakin, if I ever want to kick you in the head, you'll know," Obi-Wan said. "Let him up." Anakin released him and scrambled to his feet as Skywalker picked himself up off the floor, his gaze flicking warily back and forth between the three of them. Rex wasn't in the room, Anakin realized belatedly. He must have stayed out in the hall or gone off with the weakway bouncer and his daughter. He touched his fingers to his bloodied lip, swiping his tongue over the cut. Padme was still holding the blaster on Skywalker, though she lowered it when Obi-Wan laid a hand on her arm.
"Now," he said, as though they hadn't just tried to kick the poodoo out of each other.
"As I was saying, Captain Skywalker, we're looking for a ship to take us to Naboo."
Are you people out of your kirking minds?
Skywalker demanded, backing up.
His hand dropped to the blaster holstered on his hip, as if he was considering using it.
Anakin, irritated, snapped out a hand, catching the blaster as it flew towards him.
He regretted it an instant later, pressing his free hand to his bleeding nose as his mind screamed protest, his vision whiting out from pain.
Anakin, you idiot! Obi-Wan snapped.
Oh, go to blazes, Obi-Wan,
Anakin said. Or thought he said, anyway.
What's wrong with him? Skywalker demanded, sounding spooked.
He was in one too many pod race crashes as a child, Obi-Wan said dryly.
Anakin heard him step close, scooping the blaster out of his hand before he pressed his fingers against the side of Anakin's face. It took a moment, but the piercing pain in his head lightened, his vision clearing as the pain lessened to the now omnipresent burn he was actually starting to get used to.
Thanks, he whispered, slapping the back of his hand beneath his nose as the bleeding slowed.
If you keep doing that, the damage may become permanent, Obi-Wan warned. Don't. We need you. I need you.
I'm not doing it on purpose, Anakin said, glancing up. He was surprised to see that Skywalker hadn't made a break for it, though the reason for that probably had to do with Padme holding him at blaster point, and Rex standing in front of the closed door, blocking the exit. Anakin couldn't remember him coming in, but it had to have been after the fight. He didn't look particularly surprised to see the other Anakin, but Anakin knew from experience that Rex was almost as unflappable as Obi-Wan. Wiping the blood off his face with his sleeve, Anakin looked Skywalker over. It wasn't quite like looking into the mirror. Skywalker's face was a little thinner, and while he was missing the scar over his right eye, he had scars at the corners of his mouth that stretched halfway up his cheeks, which his furs of golden beard did nothing to conceal. A Corellian smile, Anakin had heard it called once. He wore his blonde hair longer than Anakin did, pulled back from his face with a leather wrap. Unlike Anakin, he still had both hands, his knuckles now skinned from the fight.
Ichuba the Naga, he spat in Huddies. Then, in Basic, who the cork are you people? What is he?
The better version of you, Anakin said. Obi-Wan, he's feral.
Yes, I noticed, Obi-Wan said.
I'm what?
He's what? Padme said.
It's what we call a force user who has no formal training, Obi-Wan said.
He pursed his lips, looking prim.
It's not particularly polite.
So what? Anakin said. It's accurate. He wiped his hand over his bloody mouth again. Seriously? You want this kid to pilot us out of here?
I thought you didn't trust anyone but yourself to fly us, Obi-Wan said.
He actually smiled, the bastard.
Yeah, I meant me.
Hey! Skywalker shouted. Who the kark are you? What under the twin suns is going on? Is he a clone? You're Jedi!
He said this last as if it was the worst insult he could think of.
You can't clone Jedi, you coochoo! Anakin snapped. Everyone knows that. I'm not a karking Jedi! We're Jedi. He's a clone. She's perfect. And it's a really criffing long story, Anakin said, pointing at each of them in turn. Seriously, Obi-Wan? Seriously?
Lapsing back into Huddies, Skywalker demanded.
Achua Penki! Hichuba Dinaga! No bata tutu!
Shut up, Idunki! Anakin snapped back.
Obi-Wan sighed.
What? Anakin said. You caught and trained me young. I can actually pass for civilized half the time. Obi-Wan clapped him on the shoulder.
Why don't you go lie down while I explain the situation to him?
I don't think you're helping.
Padme finally lowered her blaster, glancing over her shoulder at them.
No, Rex and I will do it. If he doesn't like Jedi, then having either of you two here won't help matters. Like blazes, I'm leaving you alone with him.
Padme gave him a disbelieving look. I can take care of myself.
I think she's right, Obi-Wan said, dragging Anakin towards the door.
Besides, Rex is here. If you even lay a hand on her!
Rex stepped aside as Obi-Wan shoved Anakin out the door, which slid shut behind them.
Are you out of your mind?
Anakin demanded as soon as Obi-Wan released him.
You just left her there with him! He's feral! He could do anything!
Feral refers to his lack of training, not his actual state of mind, Anakin,
Obi-Wan said dryly.
You have got to stop trusting people just because they were me in another life. First Darth Vader, now him!
Anakin, calm down, Obi-Wan said. Even if you weren't able to, I could sense his intentions in the Force. He was more afraid of us than you of him, and he bears Padme no ill will.
It's not ill will I'm worried about!
Obi-Wan sighed.
Padme is fully capable of taking care of herself. Besides, if he's anything like you, he's probably too smitten to try anything anyway.
What in blazes were you thinking using the Force? Do you want to burn yourself out entirely?
My head hurts,
Anakin said solemnly.
You're lucky your head is the only part of you that hurts.
If only you'd done this for the first time when you were still a Padawan, like the rest of us, so you could have learned from it,
Obi-Wan said. He pushed Anakin gently in the direction of the rented crib.
Go. Lie down. You'll feel better after you've had some sleep.
All I do is sleep, Anakin complained.
Because healing yourself consciously takes too much energy and overloads the damaged portions of your brain, Obi-Wan said. Your subconscious knows what it needs to do. It just can't do so while you're awake.
Can't you just...
Obi-Wan shook his head. I can relieve the pressure during the worst of it, but it has to heal on its own. No one has ever discovered a way to cure burnout.
Anakin shut his eyes.
His head was pounding.
You could have found another pilot. We could have stolen a ship. You and Padme both know how to fly.
Now that he's seen us, this will be easier, Obi-Wan said. Though I can't say I'm really looking forward to dealing with two of you.
Mace Windu had never seen the Senate building so chaotic. Senators, representatives, and their retinues ran back and forth, gathering in tight clumps that clogged the halls as they whispered urgently to each other, and Senate guards moved in blue-cloaked battalions among them, well-armed and anonymous beneath their helmets. Hundreds of office suites had been roped off, guarded by more Senate guards while they searched for anything left behind. As he made his way through the crowded hallways, Mace passed Adigalia, who nodded to him but didn't bother to stop him.
She hadn't found anything then.
He tapped the comlink on his gauntlet as it buzzed, turning over his hand to activate the inside holoprojector. Plo Koon's image sprang into being in his palm.
Master Windu,
he said.
We've made plentiful on Isolde.
Do you have the fugitive in custody?
He kept walking as he spoke, weaving through the crowds without bothering to glance up.
No. He escaped from Port Sec. Ahsoka and I are in pursuit now. We believe that he and his companions may be attempting to leave the planet from one of the smaller spaceports.
Do you have a positive ID?
Not yet. Isolde doesn't appear to have heard Queen Brea's announcement yet either, or I assume they wouldn't have let us make planetfall.
Unseen, but within range of his holocom's audio pickup, his Padawan chirped.
Or they're trying to lure us into a trap. Possible, but unlikely, young one,
Plo Koon allowed.
All right, Mace said. Keep us updated. I don't know if it's Kenobi or not,
but let's bring him into custody anyway. I'm heading off planet, but Yoda will make Planetfall in Coruscant in a few hours.
Understood, Master Windu.
The hologram winked out, and Mace lowered his hand, lengthening his stride. He'd already been in contact with the temple. There was a task force and a military transport waiting for him to arrive. Jedi all across the Republic were being retasked in a complex dance of reassignments, some in the process of being unceremoniously escorted off new CIS planets, others leaving midway through missions for something more pressing, while more were settling into their fresh military commands in response to Chancellor Dooku's wishes. It had been centuries since Jedi had served as soldiers and generals rather than peacekeepers. But despite the controversy in the order that had followed Dooku's announcement, few knights were balking at it. Amidala's execution of Eeth Koth and Luminara Unduli had done that much for the order, at least. Mace still had a bad feeling about the whole affair. He didn't like being played, least of all by a former Jedi. Although the settlement had a central spaceport, there were numerous independent hangars, boasting anywhere from one to a dozen docking bays scattered across the settlement, and it was to one of these they were directed. Most had numbers rather than names. Anakin walked into docking bay 94, expecting to see anything from a decades-old freighter to some hotshot Corvette won in a Sabacc game. In retrospect, he probably shouldn't have been surprised to see what could only be the Twilight, the ship he'd stolen from Zero the Hutt near the beginning of the war, and which Obi-Wan had gotten blown up over Mandalore a few months before the Battle of Odrin. He and Obi-Wan exchanged amused looks as Ani Skywalker turned away from it, a hydro grip in one hand. "What a piece of junk," Anakin said loudly. Skywalker, Ani apparently, gave him a disgusted look and spread his hands. "She'll make it 0.5 past light speed," he said. "She may not look like much, but she's got it where it counts, Jedi. I've made a lot of special modifications myself." Obi-Wan, a smile on his lips, rolled his eyes. Okay, Anakin had to admit that he had said exactly that and in just those tones once or twice before. But that wasn't the point. "Didn't that used to be your ship, General?" Rex said. "What do you mean, used to be?" Annie said suspiciously. "It's a long story," Obi-Wan said. "And not relevant at the present time." "It blew up," Anakin said. "Okay," Annie said. "You know what? I don't want to know. We're a little rushed, so if you'll just get on board, we'll get out of here." He made a gesture as if to escort Padme towards the ship. Anakin stepped between them, scowling, and Annie backed off. He actually had his foot on the boarding ramp when the Force hummed a warning, sending a stab of pain through his head. Anakin turned, startled enough by the familiar Force presence that all he could do was stare around for the source as a squad of gray-uniformed Republic security volunteers poured into the docking bay, followed by "Obi-Wan Kenobi and Anakin Skywalker, you are under arrest for crimes against the Galactic Republic." A slightly scratchy, extremely familiar voice ordered over the hiss of a pair of igniting lightsabers. "Master Plo Koon and his Padawan." Ani's panic flared in the Force as his blaster cleared his holster. "To hell with that," he spat, and fired. Ahsoka Tano's lightsaber brushed the bolt aside. "Stop that ship! Blast him!" "Rex, get Padme on board," Anakin snapped, flicking his lightsaber out of his sleeve holster into his hand, as Obi-Wan did the same. Rex fired over his shoulder as he hustled Padme up the boarding ramp with one hand on the small of her back. "Blaster cannons in the cockpit," Anakin yelled, although Rex probably didn't need to be told. "Give him hell." Obi-Wan thrust out his free hand, the force swelling around him as he sent half the soldiers flying back into the wall. Ahsoka leapt up, tucking herself into a ball as she tumbled forward, her lightsaber glancing off Obi-Wan's as she came down. "We'll handle this," Anakin ordered Ani, deflecting a barrage of blaster bolts from the remaining soldiers. "Get the ship ready!" For a moment, he thought that Ani was going to protest. Then he swore and swung himself up into the ramp, firing before he disappeared inside the twilight. Anakin wasn't afraid that he'd leave without them. Padme and Rex wouldn't let that happen. Out of the corner of his eye, he saw Ahsoka snap a kick off Obi-Wan's chin, Obi-Wan backflipping to compensate for the blow. "Don't hurt her," Anakin said. "I know that," Obi-Wan snapped back between lightsaber blows. "Anakin, watch!" Anakin swung around, diving to avoid Plo Koon's blow. He hadn't even seen the Keldor Jedi Master move. Lightsaber snapped and crackled as he blocked Plo Koon's strikes, fighting defensively except for punches and kicks. Above them, heavy blaster fire from the twilight held back the remaining Republic soldiers, which meant that all Anakin and Obi-Wan had to worry about were the Jedi. Which was plenty. "Who are you?" Plo Koon demanded over the crossed blades. "You are trained in the Jedi arts, but I do not know your face." "You just tried to arrest me," Anakin said, indignant, and dodged sideways to break the connection between the two blades, slamming a kick into Master Plo's stomach as he went. "Obi-Wan, switch!" Obi-Wan didn't hesitate, just flung himself into a roll across Anakin's back and bounced to his feet on the other side. Anakin straightened up to face Ahsoka, who had ignited her second shorter Shoto blade as well as her longer primary lightsaber. Anakin blocked her aggressive blows, gauging her fighting capability more out of habit than anything else. "Come on, Ahsoka," he said. "Just because you've got a blade in each hand doesn't mean you have to be lazy on your weak side. We've gone over this 1,000 times." "What? How do you know my name?" she snapped, her gaze skating over him without recognition. Anakin leapt to avoid a blow that should have taken both legs off at the knees, dodging back as she darted forward with her long blade. "You're getting predictable, Snips," he said. "Hasn't Master Plo taught you not to telegraph your blows? Even a battle droid would have seen that one coming." "Anakin, now is not the time for a dueling lesson," Obi-Wan snapped, followed immediately by a hissing sound as someone's lightsaber deactivated. Behind them, Anakin heard the deep, familiar sound of the Twilight's engines humming into full life. Then Padme shouted, "Get on board!" Ahsoka's gaze darted over Anakin's shoulder. He saw her brace herself to jump, felt the force gathering around her, and thrust out his free hand to send her flying backwards, striking the wall just beyond the docking bay doors. He couldn't bite back his scream of agony as something tore inside his head, his vision whiting out from pain. An instant later, Obi-Wan caught him by the collar and threw him. Anakin hit the floor of the Twilight's hole with a thump that echoed through his bones and rolled until he hit the far wall. Somehow he managed to deactivate his lightsaber and keep hold of it at the same time. "Anakin!" Padme caught him by the shoulder as he tried to push himself to his feet. Through the shrieking in his head, he heard Obi-Wan land on the deck, the boarding ramp shutting behind him. Beneath them, the Twilight shuddered as it lifted off the ground. "Anakin, Anakin, listen to my voice," Obi-Wan said, catching Anakin's face between his hands. "Try and relax." "How?" he bit off, but he could barely hear the sound of his own voice. "Bang, Master!" "What's wrong with him?" Padme demanded frantically. "Obi-Wan!" "Not now," Obi-Wan said, cutting her off. "Anakin, just relax. Listen to me. Concentrate on the sound of my voice." Anakin squeezed his eyes shut, which turned a white blur of pain into a black blur. He could feel blood hot in his face, probably from his nose, but everything else was a blaze of pain except for the familiar pressure of Obi-Wan's lightsaber-calloused hands on his face. "It hurts," he whispered. "I know, Anakin,"
I know.
Oh, Stang!
The other Anakin snarled over the internal comm.
Star Destroyers, this is going to be rough until we're clear to jump to... Cock you, you griffin!
The rest was a string of Huddy's obscenities. Padme, it would be better if you found somewhere to strap in, Obi-Wan said calmly. No, I'm staying with Anakin. He felt her hand slide into his and squeezed, glad for the contact. The twilight bucked around them. Anakin hissed in pain as his head banged off the wall behind him, but the pressure of Obi-Wan's hands didn't cease. After a long, long few minutes, he finally felt the touch of Obi-Wan's mind against his, a cool, familiar presence that eased enough of the agony that when he opened his eyes, he could make out the shape of his friend's face. Achuta! He gasped, then swore more violently as the ship bucked again.
Brace for hyperspace!
Real space slipped away from them.
They were Jedi Masters, I am certain of it,
Plo Koon said, his voice faintly distorted from the hologram.
Or at least, they were well-trained in the Jedi arts, and I sensed nothing of the dark side around them.
He paused for an instant.
They called each other Obi-Wan and Anakin. It's like they knew us, Masters,
his Padawan added.
They knew our names, both our names. The tall one, Anakin, kept talking like I was his apprentice, kept telling me not to be weak on my short side and not to telegraph my moves, stuff like that. It was weird. It was like they weren't trying to hurt us.
Ki-Adi-Mundi leaned forward in his seat, frowning. Are you certain that the ship's pilot was Anakin Skywalker?
Yes, his force signature is quite distinctive for a feral solitary. However, the strange Jedi...
He hesitated again.
He had the same signature.
That's impossible, Adi Gallia said. No two Jedi have the same signature. Not even identical twins.
It was unmistakable,
Plo Koon said.
Except that there was one distinct difference between Skywalker and the Stranger. The Stranger is certainly not feral. He is a fully trained Jedi Knight. I would stake my life on it. He and Skywalker looked identical,
Ahsoka said.
I mean, exactly alike, except that Skywalker has a beard and a Corellian grin.
She drew the shape of the scars on her cheeks with her fingers.
And this guy was clean-shaven, but with a scar here. It looked like a lightsaber scar. And I'm pretty sure he had a prosthetic right arm because he had a glove on his right hand but not on his left. But aside from that, they looked like the same person. Height, eyes, bone structure, all that. Like clones, or identical twins. Blue lightsaber,
she added as an afterthought.
He was really good. Both of them were. Indeed,
her master agreed.
I would rate them both amongst the best duelists in the Order.
Describe the other, can you? Yoda asked. Obi-Wan Kenobi, you think he is?
I believe so. The Force signature was identical to what I remembered of Obi-Wan's, save that this warrior was a fully trained Jedi Knight, perhaps even a master.
Impossible! Ki-Adi-Mundi exclaimed. Kenobi may be many things, but even he would not be able to pass for a Jedi Master in the Force. Nor would he be so good a duelist against another Jedi, I think. Apo Rancisis said in his slow, thoughtful voice. We have heard nothing of an apprentice, and I do not believe that he and Amidala would have been able to conceal that.
There were differences, however,
Plo Koon said, bringing them back on track.
The last we saw of Kenobi, Amidala's broadcast.
Every Jedi in the Republic knew what he was talking about.
Kenobi was clean-shaven. This one was bearded, more than merely a few days could account for. The security holos from Isolde Spaceport Security have already been sent,
he added, before anyone could ask.
His lightsaber was also colored differently. Obi-Wan has carried a white lightsaber for almost a decade now,
Windu said, his voice and image crackling from the distortion of the hyperspace communication.
Before that, he used Qui-Gon Jinn's old lightsaber, a green blade. What color was this one? It was blue,
Ahsoka said.
Like Skywalker's. Well, the guy he called Anakin, anyway.
Maybe this is related to the disturbance in the Force we all sensed a few days ago. Even Pyle offered. Did you see their companions?
Briefly,
Plo Koon allowed.
I believe that one may have been a Fett clone, as the Confederacy uses. The younger knight named him Rex. The other was a human female called Padme.
Shaak-Ti's hologram straightened in her seat.
As in Padme Amidala, the Queen of Naboo?
Still on Naboo, Queen Amidala is, Yoda said. Know this we do. It's a common enough name on Naboo these days, Adigalia said. But it can't be a coincidence. Kenobi, a clone, a woman named Padme, and Anakin Skywalker. And two Jedi Knights who shouldn't exist.
I can tell you one thing for sure,
Plo Koon said.
The younger knight, Anakin, was suffering from burnout.
You're sure?
I am certain of it. The physical symptoms are unmistakable, and while there was nothing of the dark side in him, I believe that he carried a dark artifact of some sort, though one with very little power in it.
Disturbing news this is, Yoda said. Find him we must, before Kenobi and Amidala can learn of them.
That will not be difficult, said Plo Koon. We managed to place a homing beacon on Skywalker's starship before he departed. We're tracking him now, though we don't have a clear path through hyperspace yet. Since we got kicked off the planet and all,
Ahsoka explained.
Oh, yes,
Plo Koon said, in response to the circle of raised eyebrows and other gestures of surprise that greeted this revelation.
It appears that the government of Isolde has chosen to respect Alderaan's departure from the Republic. We were informed, quite politely, that we no longer had jurisdiction or authority in Confederate space, and were escorted to the edges of the system by the Planetary Defense Force. Kicked off the planet,
Ahsoka repeated.
But not a blaster point. I'm pretty sure they were planning that next, though.
Windu massaged the skin over his eyes with his fingertips.
Find them,
he ordered.
Soon. I don't need Dooku to hear about this, too.
Remember, we all do, Yoda said dourly. The last such mysterious warrior. And what came of him? Supporting him between them and leaving a blood trail behind, Padme and Obi-Wan got Anakin into one of the Twilight's passenger cabins, which was really just a converted cargo hold with fold-down bunks installed in the walls. Letting go of Anakin, Padme darted forward to pull down one of the bunks. She snatched up one of their packs to pull out a blanket, as Obi-Wan dunked Anakin into the bunk, who swayed dangerously but managed to stay sitting up.
Fine, Anakin slurred.
Obi-Wan moved a finger back and forth in front of his face.
You're not tracking, he said, sounding worried. How do you feel?
Like my head's on fire.
Like everything's on fire.
He paused. Padme held her breath, her arms full of blankets.
Please, please let him be all right. I feel like he did when Obi-Wan, the other Obi-Wan, left him to burn in Mustafar.
Obi-Wan's hand tightened on Anakin's shoulder. Anakin pressed his hands to his head.
Who am I picking that up from? He said. Palpatine gave me Obi-Wan's memories, not Vader's. I shouldn't...
He jerked his head up suddenly, staring at Obi-Wan.
Why am I getting it from you?
Bleed over, Obi-Wan said, his mouth thinning.
The Master Padawan bond was tangled up while you were gone, and he and I had a connection I didn't realize until you turned up.
I got it from him. You're getting it from me.
But you shouldn't be picking up anything right now.
He tipped Anakin's chin up with two fingers, frowning as he stared into Anakin's eyes.
I'm going to put you into a healing sleep until we get to Naboo.
Anakin jerked away from him, his expression horrified.
No!
Yes, Obi-Wan said.
I hate those!
I know, Obi-Wan said.
But you're not exactly leaving me any choice. You can't heal if you're awake, and you certainly can't heal if you're upset.
He paused, his head going to one side for an instant.
Or if you were receiving, which you shouldn't be right now, even from me.
Obi-Wan, Anakin protested, but Obi-Wan shook his head.
I'll make it in order if I have to, but it'll be easier on both of us if you're not fighting me. Anakin, trust me. You don't want to see what happens to a Jedi who burns themselves out entirely.
I have.
Anakin, please,
Padme said quietly. His gaze went to her, and he bit his lip, obviously torn.
Finally, he nodded.
Take care of her, he said to Obi-Wan.
Obi-Wan nodded. Always.
He cupped Anakin's face between his hands, frowning in concentration.
Look into my eyes and try to relax.
Padme felt her skin prickle as power rose in the air around them. She sat down beside Anakin and reached for his hand, feeling his grip tighten on hers. He and Obi-Wan were staring at each other, both of them breathing hard. And Obi-Wan said,
Stop fighting me.
I'm trying, Anakin protested.
Stop thinking about it. Think about something else.
Think about me, Padme suggested, leaning over to kiss his cheek. She felt Anakin shiver at the touch, but some of the tension went out of him.
Better, Obi-Wan murmured.
After a moment, Padme heard Anakin's breathing even out, his heartbeat slowing and steadying as he slumped forwards. Obi-Wan reached forward to catch him, laying him down carefully on the bunk. Padme reluctantly pried her hand loose of Anakin's death grip to pull the blankets over him.
What is that? She asked.
A healing sleep? I've never heard of it before.
Obi-Wan scrubbed a hand over his face, looking tired. It's something Jedi healers do for other Jedi. It's a little like putting him into a coma.
When he's awake, he's constantly using the Force in a dozen small ways that he's probably not even aware of, and that's putting more strain on the damaged part of his mind. If he's asleep, the only thing the Force has to do is heal him.
He made a small sound of pain, pinching the bridge of his nose between his fingers.
Padme laid a hand on his arm. Are you all right?
I'll be fine. I'm not a trained healer. It's harder for me to do even when Anakin isn't fighting me every step of the way.
He glanced up at Annie, who had been watching them from the entrance to the cabin.
Padme didn't know when he had come in.
What's wrong with him? Obi-Wan frowned at him, then said,
Burnout. He pulled too much of the Force through himself and overloaded the channels in his mind that allow him to manipulate it. Like using a high-voltage power cell for something that requires a lower-voltage one.
Is that some kind of Jedi thing? Annie asked warily.
No, it's a possibility for any Force user.
though Jedi are more prone to it than any of the other Force traditions.
Obi-Wan straightened to his feet.
I wouldn't expect that you have anything to worry about, Captain. How long until they come out of hyperspace?
We'll have to drop out to switch hyperlanes in 6 hours, but we'll be in transit for almost 20 hours to get to Naboo.
He eyed the unconscious Anakin with deep suspicion.
You two can come up front if you want. I've got questions. I've got a lot of questions, Jedi. Starting with, what the hell Obi-Wan Kenobi, the Queen's Knight, is doing on my ship?
Obi-Wan's gaze flickered to Padme.
I thought you'd told him.
I said you were a Jedi from another universe. Adding any more detail didn't seem necessary at the time, she said.
Oh, I take it you didn't tell him your surname either,
Obi-Wan said, then scrubbed his hands over his face and added,
I'm sorry, that was unfair. I'll answer any of your questions that I can, Captain Skywalker. But if you'd give me some time first, I'd appreciate it. I'd like to stay with Anakin and make sure the healing sleep is holding.
Ani stared at him for a long minute.
Fine, he said. Not like any of us are going anywhere.
He turned on his heel and strode away, the door sliding shut behind him. Padme cupped Anakin's cheek in her hand, studying the familiar lines of his face. His breathing was steady. Some of the strain of the past few days, the past 3 years, gone. In sleep, he just looked young and tired, not at all like a Jedi Knight who had held the fate of the galaxy in his hands and let it slip. He was, she realized with some surprise, just about the age that the other Obi-Wan, the one from this universe, had been in the old Holonews broadcast they had seen on the Queen Brea. He seemed older. But the galaxy had been a very different place 13 years ago.
He'll be all right, Obi-Wan said.
He had pulled down one of the other bunks and was sitting on it, pulling his cloak around himself. After a moment, he got up again and came over, circling Anakin's left wrist with one hand and tugging the Ouroboros off with the other. He turned the Sith relic over between his fingers, frowning at it. Padme swallowed. Even in the artificial light of the cabin, the twined metal serpents that formed the bracelet looked faintly sinister, their scarlet eyes glinting like something alive.
Is that dangerous? She asked. Is it hurting him?
I don't know, Obi-Wan said. There isn't much power in it right now. But it can't be helping.
He stared at it for a long moment, then looked up at Padme.
Would you mind terribly holding onto it for a few days? I'm afraid that if I do, I'll set it off accidentally. You're not Force-sensitive. You shouldn't be in any danger. I just don't want to take the chance that it's leeching power from Anakin without either of us realizing.
I'll take it. Padme held out her hand.
Obi-Wan dropped it into her palm, which dipped slightly under the weight. She had been half expecting it to hum or buzz, anything to indicate the power Obi-Wan and Anakin talked about. But instead, it felt like nothing more than any other piece of jewelry about the same size. She slipped it into one of the interior pockets of her jacket, wary of Obi-Wan's obvious concern, and unwilling to wear it against her skin.
Obi-Wan slumped back down onto the bunk, swiping his hand so quickly under his nose that Padme almost missed the smear of red on his fingers.
Thank you. It's been worrying me.
Maybe you should get some sleep, too, she said, as diplomatically as she could manage. You look tired.
Obi-Wan glanced at his bloody fingers, then wiped them clean on the knee of his trousers.
It's been an exciting day, he said. I'll be all right.
He pulled the folds of his cloak around himself, dragging the hood up to shadow his face. Padme lay her hand along the side of Anakin's face, thinking that she should get up and find something to clean the dried blood off, but utterly disinclined to leave him at just that moment. "I trust you," she said quietly, and didn't know whether she was speaking to Anakin or Obi-Wan. It had been more than a century since the last time Yoda had been in a cantina like this, and for some reason it left him deeply uneasy. The mass of people in here left the Force cloudy, difficult to get a fix on the future or on any individual, but he trusted it to warn him of any danger, should it come. In case the Force failed him, he wore his now rarely used lightsaber on his belt, hidden beneath the folds of his cloak. His small hover chair was buffeted back and forth by the crowds. He twitched the controls to raise it a little higher into the air. The message had arrived for him after the council meeting had broken up. "Tonight, the Outlander Club," it had said. "Come alone. I want to come home." And the single initial. K. And so Yoda had come, still hoping that the lost, last son of his lineage, the line of masters and Padawans, would come home. "Master Yoda." The voice was a woman's, not the man's he had expected. Still, Yoda turned his hover chair to face her, lowering it to an appropriate height. She looked up at him, her face shadowed beneath her dark hood, though not enough to hide her tattoos. The hiss of an igniting lightsaber was lost in the clatter of sound in the crowded cantina. Astonished, Yoda's hands went to his belly as he stared down at the scarlet beam that penetrated clearly through him. The pain followed an instant later as the woman deactivated her lightsaber, returning it to her belt. "Obi-Wan Kenobi sends his regards," she said, and smiled.